Hi, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Toy Harp, a podcast about bluegrass. This is the last episode of season two. Here from Nashville is my conversation with Allison Krauss.
I remember, you know, the first time I looked out in the audience and saw people singing words to our songs that only we had recorded. That was just a really crazy moment. Just never thought it'd end up being there. Never thought we'd hear back from Rounder. Yeah. Never thought we would hear from Rounder in the first place.
If this is your first time listening, you can hear full interviews with Jerry Douglas, Allison Brown, Bela Fleck, Larry Sparks, Jody Stecker, and so many more wherever you get your podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Later on.
Welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. Guess who I am? Can you guess? Just give it one guess.
Wonder Woman.
Yes, correct.
No, wait. Hillary Clinton.
Oh my
God. Rodham Clinton.
Listen.
I'm not with her. I am her.
I am her. I am a beautiful grandmother. Well, welcome. I'm Cindy Howes. I host this podcast. I'm here with Lizzie Ngo, who also hosts this podcast. Together, we are the Basic Folk hosts.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi. It's so great to have you here today, Lizzie. We have a really cool episode featuring Tyrone Cotton coming up. Before we get into that, let's talk about some business. You can sign up for the Basic Folk newsletter. It's a once-a-month email that lets you know what's happening with the podcast, who's on it, what's on it, how we're feeling about everything about what's on it. And you can sign up for that at a link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com. You can also follow us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Basic Folk Pod. And we're a listener-supported podcast. We wrapped up our 2023 fall fundraiser. If you contributed, thank you so much. If you did not get a chance to, hey, why don't you go make a contribution? $5 a month. You can get a Basic Folk beanie in the shop at our website. There's also a link in the show notes, basicfolk.com/donate. We are listener supported. Everything that we do made possible by listeners. Today, we're very happy and excited to present an episode featuring Tyrone Cotton.
Okay, so there is some important context to this episode. Cindy and I have been talking recently about like what our goals are with Basic Folk, and I've realized that something that's so important to me is being a historian of folk music and telling the stories of people all over our musical community in different capacities who are making great work in their communities. Nobody is a better example of this than Tyrone Cotton. I came across his music in 2018 when I traveled to Louisville, Kentucky to do a festival with the Louisville Orchestra. And there were several Kentucky artists that were on that lineup, and Tyrone just absolutely blew me away. His voice will like stop you in your tracks. So, you know, years later when we saw an email that he was releasing an album, I was so excited to listen. This is a debut album for Tyrone, but he is by no means a new artist. He has been touring the country and the world for decades, but mostly being like a stalwart of the Louisville, Kentucky music scene. He's constantly giving back. He plays in senior centers. He plays in clubs. He's a frequent collaborator of a lot of different musicians in his scene. And this debut album, which was co-produced by Josh Kaufman and Ray Rizzo, is a testament to all of his diverse influences in roots music and to his story as a Kentuckian. So I think you're just going to absolutely love the album. It's a really cool fusion of different types of genres, and he has really great stories to tell. So we interviewed not only Tyrone, but Ray Rizzo, the producer, to get both the artist and producer perspective on this tremendous debut album. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Tyrone Cotton on Basic Folk.
Singer-songwriter Tyrone Cotton just released his debut album, Man Like Me, in 2023. And a quick listen to these songs reveals an artist who has spent decades steeped in roots music. Lizzie Noh spoke with Tyrone and Ray Rizzo, one of the album's producers, about Tyrone's journey as an artist and the making of Man Like Me. Our story begins in Louisville, Kentucky, where Tyrone grew up listening to his grandfather and his friends in the neighborhood playing guitar.
It's been raining since the middle of June.
Okay, Tyrone Cotton, welcome to Basic Folk.
All right.
I am so excited to have you on here. I first heard your music in 2018, I think, when we played that festival with the Louisville Orchestra.
Yeah, that was fun.
When I heard that you had a full-length album coming out, I was like, get me the link. Let's go back to the very beginning of your journey as a musician. I've read that your grandfather was a reverend and a singer. How would you describe his relationship with music, and how did he influence you as a vocalist and as a storyteller?
Well, he wasn't like a professional singer or anything. He just had this really interesting voice and a unique voice. And I just remember being a little kid. I mean, just really, really young, and listening to him sing in the kitchen one day at our house. And there was something about that that always stuck with me. And it's just one of my earliest kind of recollections of music happening. Yeah, I was just so young, and that voice just really, it was captivating.
What types of songs did he sing?
Well, I mean, most of them were, of a religious nature. But he liked his blues. He liked Jimmy Reed, just this old blues stuff that he loved that he would sing. And I remember one day when I was older, I had my guitar. We went to the park and we just jammed on some blues. That was kind of, it was fun. Just a nice memory, hanging out with my grandfather and pumping out some songs. And one time we actually did a show together.
Stop. That's so amazing.
Yeah. He did some tunes like St. Louis Blues and some things like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was funny. It was fun. It's like a great memory.
Now, tell me, I want to hear about your early experiences playing guitar. Like, when you were first getting started on the guitar, was there a guitarist that you heard that made you think, like, I want to sound like that?
I used to hang out with some people in my neighborhood, and some of them were, they played guitar. And I remember I had some, they were a little bit older, but friends, and they would rehearse in the neighborhood, and I was like, I don't know, there was something about it I was drawn to, I just really liked it. I was just, it seemed like I couldn't get enough of it. And then there was a guy that had a guitar for sale, and so I got my first guitar. It was a Kingston. I still have it. We paid $60 for it, and nothing special about the guitar other than the memories. It didn't play very well. But that was my first.
Like, having a nice guitar for your first guitar is a different thing. Like, there's definitely honor in having like a very bare bones instrument for your first one.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it definitely wasn't fancy, and I still have it, and I was thinking about getting some work done on it just to get it restored. But the repairman said it probably wouldn't be a good idea just to leave it alone as it is, and which is fine.
Yeah.
And so it's just a piece that sits in my living room or my main space, and I just look at it,
It's good to remember where you came from.
Yeah.
Love don't always come easy. I'm hoping it finds a way.
With a $60 guitar and a dream, Tyrone headed off to music school, studying classic guitar under David Kelsey. Looking back, he believes that music school broadened his horizons as a musician.
Well, those years, I think, you know, Kelsey, he was, you know, he taught me a lot about technique and getting different sounds out of the instrument. And, you know, sometimes he would present a piece of music and I can still hear him to this day saying, "Can you make music out of that?" You know, I mean, you're okay, here's the song. But he says, "But make music out of it, you know, make it sing, wow. Make it sing, you know, it's just, it's one thing to play the notes, but does it have personality?" And yeah, his thing. Yeah. I remember him just, like I said, saying those words, "Make music out of it." That was kind of big. I don't know. There's something about that that stuck with me. And in those days, let's see, I just heard so much music, which was just invaluable, you know, just
right
to listening to so much all the time. And yeah, it just opened a lot of doors, yeah, about possibilities. And just yeah, it was just kind of getting an education, just kind of all around, not just for guitar, but just kind of broadening my horizons about music in general.
I wonder, did you ever feel a tension between your own individuality as an artist, like your authentic creator self, and the really like formal structure that you have to kind of fit into to succeed in the like educational setting? Like, did you ever feel like there was a tension between those two? Or do you have advice for if there are music students who are like, "I want to learn from the greats, but I also want to stay true to myself"? Like, how did you handle that dynamic?
I guess there was so much work that needed to be done, just like trying to get some of the guitar stuff together, that I was just trying to keep up with that alone. You know, I wasn't, that was a challenge enough at the time, you know. Then I kind of later went back and, you know, put myself into the equation, kind of, you know, well, let me put it like this. Like at WKU, you know, even though, you know, I was doing the classical guitar, but, you know, like on the weekends, some weekends there was a, you know, or some couple times during the week, occasionally get a chance to play out or something. And then I just did my own thing. You know, I was just kind of developing, didn't think about it at the time, but just the, my thing, you know, I was just kind of getting that together. There was a place called the Catacombs and there was a coffee shop, and every now and then I would go to play, and it was, you know, it was kind of invaluable to play out in front of people.
Right.
And it always made me a nervous wreck to perform in front of people back then. Yeah, there was, I learned a lot just getting in front of people.
Yeah, that fear factor, you kind of have to like just push through it. There's no way around stage fright.
There isn't. Yeah. Sometimes I would just be a mess, you know, I guess, but yeah, you just gotta push through it. I guess some people are hams, as they put it, natural hams, and they just feed off of that. But I was a little more reluctant.
But you've, like, I feel like what I know of you is that you are just like a consummate live performer. How did you develop into someone that like really had a routine and a rhythm on the road when it didn't come naturally? Like, was there a tipping point where you were like, "Oh, I think I know what I'm doing now"? Or was it just over time you felt more and more comfortable?
I think over time you just feel, yeah. Over time, the more you do it, just get more comfortable with it. But I don't know. I've also found that sometimes it's like, oh, you play a bunch of shows or whatever, then, you know, you were really comfortable. Then all of a sudden you do one where you're just, there's like for some reason, who knows what happened, why. It can be just a mystery, but then you just kind of, something just makes you nervous about a particular show.
Yep.
Or maybe it's the room. Maybe you're like, oh, I'm playing at this certain place, and all these different people have played here, that some of them that you are aware of, and you're like, oh, man, that's, I don't know. This room is kind of getting me nervous or something. And, you know, it's just in the head, but, yeah, every now and then that hard stage fright can slip back.
Well, thank you for admitting it, because I feel that way, too.
He might have started out as a hesitant performer, but Cotton leaned into his craft and into his musical community.
He has become a stalwart of the Louisville music scene, playing club shows and a standing gig at a local senior center where he brings the house down with soul classics. This is where producer Ray Rizzo enters our story. A Kentuckian since the age of 11, he was well-versed in the Louisville music scene when he came across Tyrone and his music at the Rudyard Kipling.
When I was 11, I moved with my family to Louisville, Kentucky. I say Louisville when I'm out of town, but right. It's Louisville. Right. Got involved in the music scene, kind of the more bohemian side of the music scene, which sort of gravitated around a venue called the Rudyard Kipling. So before I was actually of age to go to bars, there was the Rudyard where we could sneak in the back and sit and listen to music. And that was when I first heard Tyrone. I think the first song I ever heard him play was Boots of Spanish Leather, the Bob Dylan. At the time, there was a band in Louisville that was really, really popular. They're called Domani. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of like a, I don't know, nowadays they'd fit totally in an Americana kind of thing. But at the time, there wasn't quite a term for it. I remember one night Tyrone opening, just sitting with a guitar and singing. Mm-hmm. That was just how I saw him around. Mm-hmm. And little by little, I got to play with musicians. And a coffee house opened up in town called Twice Told Coffee Shop down on Bardstown Road. Tyrone was playing a lot at the time with a guitar player named John Grammer. Mm-hmm. And I had sat in with John sometimes. So it was just inevitable. We had one night where we sat in, and I remember I was playing a bass drum and a beer keg and some shakers. It was a very kind of Tom Waitsy sort of affair. It burned in my brain how meaningful that making music was with Tyrone at that time. That it, you know, there are things you do as a musician that it's not always conscious, but you know you're seeking something out, and it's something that you have some kind of previous experience with. Playing with Tyrone has always been that kind of experience. He's so deep inside what he's saying and doing. It's an extraordinary thing. Yeah, we met that way, and naturally he had made a lot of friends. I moved to New York in 2004, and already he was coming to town and playing with poets and doing things. But then once I came to town, we would kind of make plans at least once a year. Well, after a while, it started being kind of on the regular that he would come to town and we would play and we'd throw a band together. And so it's just kind of evolved that way.
She said, we may meet again. You never know. Just like yesterday and the day before.
Ray's admiration for Tyrone's songwriting and his musical instincts was a guiding principle as they went into the studio to record Man Like Me. Rizzo had spent years watching Cotton perform and wanted to make sure that he captured the magic he had witnessed so many times.
To me, one of the most fascinating things about the recording process is that tricky process where you try to get genuine, emotionally resonant performances from musicians, even though they're like sitting alone in a room with headphones on, no audience. And Tyrone is a consummate live performer. He has played everywhere. He's played all over the world, and he's a staple of the Louisville scene. But this is a debut album for him. So what role did his identity as a performer play in the studio? And were there things that you did as a producer to try to help encourage that live persona to come through in the studio?
Boy, there's a lot to say to that. First off, for what it's worth, I think for the world at large, this is Tyrone's debut record. But back in the early aughts, Tyrone made a record in Louisville, a fantastic record that it might be on CD Baby, but it was produced by a musician in town named Danny Kiley. And the reason I mention that is because part of going into the record was definitely, I was so in love with his songs and feeling the pressure of how to render them in a way that would feel timeless. And I recognized that Tyrone's previous music often had an upright bass on it. A lot of the situations where we'd play live would be a pretty quiet affair as far as the rhythm section was concerned. So I wanted to kind of build on what I'd already heard Tyrone do in recordings and also create a scenario that would be really effortless for him. Josh and I have worked together for years in a lot of scenarios, and a lot of times we work together with Dan Goodwin, the engineer of the record. I had some idea what it was going to be like if we came together and worked. And I think to answer your question, the only suggestion that I had going into it was that we set up very close together and not use headphones, and Tyrone just sing and play in the room. Played and sang at the same time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. We did. All of the tracks are live, the rhythm section as well. And there's a few tunes where Josh joined on piano as we were tracking. After the basic track was done and we had something we liked, you know, there would be some overdubbing that took place.
That really is a testament to everybody's timing.
Yeah. Yeah. And Tyrone and I were really fortunate when he would come to New York. We'd play with different people, and about a year, we had talked for a couple of years about making a record. And I talked about how cool it would be if we could get together with Josh and make something. And as it became a little more of a real possibility, we met a bass player named Vin Warner. Vin plays a lot with Johnny Markowski, who's played with New Riders of the Purple Sage. And Vin sat in with us once, and it felt like the band could go anywhere, and we could go anywhere at a really soft dynamic. So he became a pretty integral, Vin became a pretty integral part to how we were able to record the way we did.
Wow. Were there moments in the studio where you set off in one direction and then had to turn back around because you felt like you were straying away from, you know, what Tyrone's songs should sound like? Like, did you ever have to kind of change your mind and start over?
Yeah, I just felt like a little wave of anxiety thinking about it.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's cool. Because
Who among us has not been there?
Right, right. Yeah, well, I don't think we went down a path where we were, you know, part of the way down and decided, okay, this isn't working. But we did set out to really go in some distinctly different places. Something that was important to Tyrone was that he didn't want to make... playing in Louisville and being so influenced by the blues, people would often say, oh, he's a blues musician, or, you know, even R&B felt like, you know, it didn't really represent the folk side of what he did.
Time for me to go back. Time for me to go back. Time for me to go back. Time for me to go back.
Tyrone focused on making sure that each recording represented the essence of the song without too many bells and whistles getting in the way.
And when you start listening, sometimes you realize, man, this is like, it's too cluttered, too thick.
Yeah.
It's like, what am I focusing in on here? That I don't want to diminish that, you know? And so how do I bring that out if I want this to be a vocal record or whatever?
Yeah.
How does this become a vocal record, you know, where that's emphasized? You know, maybe the bass parts or the drum parts or any part, you know, you get the detail just to make sure that you're going where you want to go with something. And just, keeping the energy there, the focus of what kind of record it is that you're trying to make.
Right, because when you're in the studio, you have a million different options.
Yep.
So you have to be really smart about fine-tuning what is clutter and what is necessary.
Right.
Maybe we could talk about a specific song. I was really struck by the arrangement of Go Back. I felt like the percussion and the strings just perfectly complemented the storytelling. So what were some of the emotions you were trying to capture with that song, and how did you go about arranging that song, Go Back?
Well, Go Back, it was a little difficult at first.
What was difficult about it?
Well, the way I was playing it live, it didn't have the same groove.
Mm-hmm.
And the groove was thicker on the recording. I mean, the groove was more pronounced on the recording. Yeah, it was like when I was playing it, I always played it solo. And I could do certain things. I could take certain liberties.
Do you mean like with the flow of tempo and...
Yeah, I was just kind of finger picking
like a different feel?
Yeah. It was there was, when I'm playing it solo, of course, there's no piano and there's... I don't know. It was almost like a super folksy, and so it was a hard one to wrestle to the ground.
Mm.
But it finally came through. And the way I was playing it solo didn't really work with the way that the recording. So some things had to be thought about and changed a bit. So. Yeah, I remember trying to go back. I don't know. I feel like there's like there's a lot of emotion in that song, in the lyrics.
Yeah.
And I hope that came across in the recording.
I think it did.
We wanted to do something that didn't sound like anything else. So in on his songs on the record, Man Like Me and Go Back are two mm-hmm. examples I can think of where I feel like Josh and myself and Dan, the engineer who really needs to be mentioned for what he created on the record, we were able to kind of apply some of the talents that we had to kind of create a different atmosphere for Tyrone's voice to be heard. I think that's the simplest way to put it, is that we wanted to construct something that was just a new space, a new environment for Tyrone's songs to live in. I think going into it, the only thing we pulled from the real world to kind of give a bit of a direction was the first Latin Playboys record.
Mm, yeah.
That the textures in that record and the way that the songs come across is like, they feel like urgent folk songs, but the music around it feels like it's coming from a whole other universe.
The songs kept their integrity, but, you know, there's production.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like just the right amount, I felt like. The right balance. You know, I mean, sometimes if you take a... You could have a song and it can go too heavy.
Yeah.
One way. I don't know. I just felt like there was a balance.
Do you have an example of that? Of like when a song started to go off track and you guys had to like right the ship?
Well, Man Like Me was a little difficult to record. Just getting the groove.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to play it faster than the recording. And with the band, the groove that I was using and in the studio with the band, it just, something wasn't clicking. And with the production with Josh and Ray, and, you know, we finally... Once again, it got wrestled to the ground, and finally, you know, it just it just kind of came out. I don't know, a song like that, you could probably play it five different ways, and it may work.
Right.
You know, I took a lot of criticism from some friends once they heard the recorded version. You know, I was accused of ruining the song.
Oh my gosh, you have really direct friends. Like, you deserved that windstorm. You've ruined yourself with friends like these. And one, who needs enemies?
One lady says she hated it.
Wow.
Which was fine. I mean, I don't, that doesn't bother me.
Tyrone, are you being honest? That would really bother me if someone said they hated my song.
Well, she liked the other version.
Got it.
So, you know, in my reaction was, well, you know, I'm not getting, I wish it was like the other recordings that you did way back.
Yeah.
Or so that was more you. It's not more, it's just different, you know, and I believe in it. I believe in it. And, you know, maybe you don't, maybe I feel like you don't quite get something here or whatever. You're entitled to this. And it, no, it doesn't,
yeah.
It doesn't really bother. No, that's fine.
Candles burning in the middle of the night. Don't be afraid to look me in the eye. Come on and smile. Lay it on the table so it's plain to see. What are you doing here with a man like me? See, the deal has been cut. The deal is done. The Lord's paying even money. The devil's paying 5 to 1. I understand you're afraid and you don't want to get mixed up with a man like me. You don't want to get mixed up with a man like me.
If the confident, eclectic roots of Man Like Me are any indication, Tyrone Cotton has more stories to tell and we'll be lucky to listen. What makes this album special is what makes the best Americana album special. A patchwork of influences and traditions, the best of contemporary recording techniques, and a singular storytelling voice.
Yeah, I want to make another record. I don't know what kind of record. You know, I hope, hopefully it'll be different than the last. I just, I don't want to keep doing the same thing. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, always something a little different.
If each album is like a little bit of a different genre-wise or in terms of the production, yeah. Like, what would you want, like, your legacy to be? What do you want the unifying theme to be, like, across your releases?
I don't know. I mean, quality and covered a little more ground each time.
Mm. I love that.
That it kept moving forward. It kept moving. It didn't. Yeah, I wouldn't want to make the same record twice.
I mean, even now, if you hear him play, like you know, he's really generous with the musicians he plays with, and I mean this in the best way. He doesn't really put a lot of thought into how he's going to play the song. He just gets inside of it, and we all get to follow him and tell the story with him. So, the future is definitely unwritten. For him, I just hope that in a much broader way, he's able to move people the way that he's moved me and a lot of the people who already know who he is.
Sometimes dreams come true. Oh, I know, 'cause I have you. You're my morning flower, my blue sky too. Golden starlight, I love you. Heaven's hand scattered.
This episode was produced by Lizzie No and edited by Sarah Wardrop and Cindy House. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes there, wherever you get podcasts. You can also check us out on the SiriusXM app by searching for Basic Folk. Or check out our website, basicfolk.com.
You should share this episode with a friend, specifically if there's somebody that you see regularly in your life, for example, the barista at a coffee shop you go to a lot, or a friend of a friend who every time you see them, you're like, let's get lunch, let's catch up, let's stay in touch, and you never really follow up with that person. This episode needs to be sent to that person in your life because you'll be able to let them know, even though I haven't really kept up with you, as you care. And here's an amazing podcast.
I'm thinking about you, and we're thinking about all of you, especially you. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. We'll talk to you next time. Go listen to Lizzie Knows' album, Halfsies. Okay, bye.
Bye.